Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher, 8:06 on this Wednesday, March 20th, first full day of spring. 32 degrees currently in Old Town Park City, and on the phone with us from the ABC Forecast Center, meteorologist Thomas Keyboy. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie. Happy Wednesday to you. We're halfway through the week, as you mentioned, first full day of spring, and we're going to have that full-on spring feeling throughout the Wasatch back as daytime highs today will come in the 50s. We'll see low 50s in Park City, and we'll see upper 50s down in the Heber Valley. We'll check in with mostly sunny skies. It's going to be an absolutely beautiful day. If anybody wants to spend some time outside, I would encourage it. So just get out there and enjoy it with the sunshine and mild temperatures that we have. So beautiful day today, and it'll be quiet as we move into tonight with the overnight low falling to right around freezing throughout the Wasatch back under mostly clear skies. The mild temperatures that we have in place are going to be sticking around as we close the work week, so you can expect more in the way of 50s for both Thursday and Friday. We'll continue with mid to upper 50s in Heber, while we'll continue with low mid 50s in Park City. But the high pressure that's keeping our weather quiet today and leading to the sunshine will start to move out of the way, and that's going to open up the door to some slightly unsettled weather trickling in as we go throughout our Thursday and Friday. So a weak disturbance moves in tomorrow. This will result in roughly a 1 in 5 or 20% chance for a few passing showers. If we see the showers in the morning, there's a chance that we see a rain and snow mix, or maybe even some straight snow, likely not going to be anything too significant. Then if we see the wet weather in the afternoon, we'll see mainly rain showers at that daytime high in Park City coming in at 50 degrees. But again, that chance of wet weather itself only 20%, so there is also a decent chance that we don't see anything tomorrow. Just don't be surprised if some wet weather finds you as we move throughout the day on Thursday. We're back to mostly clear skies with that overnight low dropping to around 30 degrees on Thursday night, and Friday brings a slightly better chance of wet weather on Thursday, but instead of really a disturbance moving in, our winds are going to be out of the southwest. Moisture will start to increase, so there'll be a 30% chance for showers, with that chance mainly coming in the afternoon. So if we see any wet weather in Park City, it's more than likely going to be in the form of rain, but outside of any wet weather, we'll see mostly sunny to partly cloudy skies on just what will be a mild and breezy day with those winds out of the southwest. With high pressure out of the way by this weekend, that's going to open up the door to a cold front that's going to be moving in. So by Saturday, that cold front moves in. We'll be looking at a 90% chance for showers. It's still going to be mild, but it's not going to be quite as warm compared to the next few days. We'll see a daytime high of 48 degrees, but as quickly as the front moves through, you'll notice it, because the overnight low on Saturday night will be dropping into the mid-20s. So any chance of rain showers will likely become snow showers, and we'll be holding on to a good chance for snow showers not only through Sunday, but likely through the first half of next week, because Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday at this point all likely bring more than or better than a 50-50 chance of seeing snow. We'll see mostly cloudy skies and much cooler temperatures compared to what we're getting used to. On Sunday, the daytime high will come in at 38, when we'll see daytime highs around 35 to 37 degrees between Monday and Tuesday, and overnight lows by that point will be in the low to mid-20s. So we got that spring feeling out there right now, but we do have winter that's going to be making its way back to the Beehive State by early next week, Leslie.
Okay. Sounds like spring. Thank you. And taking a look in the backcountry, on the phone with us from the Utah Avalanche Center, we have Nikki. Good morning, Nikki.
Good morning. So temps are generally warm in the backcountry. This morning we actually had an inversion where the trailhead temperatures are around 28, 29 degrees, and the mountaintop temperatures were closer to 34, 35 degrees. So another warm day. The primary concern is just going to be the wet snow. So this morning, avalanche danger is going to be low. While the slopes are frozen, but as the temperatures warm up and the sun comes up, the avalanche danger is going to rise to moderate on all of the solar slopes, so all the south-facing slopes and even the lower elevation northerly slopes. So pay attention as the snow surface heats up, and you're going to want to make sure that you aren't underneath or any rock bands or in any consequential terrain.
Okay, Nikki, thank you. Stay tuned. Coming up, we'll be checking in with artist William Cranstover and Bob Peake with details about the return of Who's Art next Tuesday, the 26th, 7 to 9 p.m. Then the first in the Park City Board of Realtors speaker series, Tim Weishire, discusses his topic dealing with difficult people while communicating with tact and professionalism. And Park City Artists Association members Karen Kendall and Kelly Gallagher with details about this weekend's art gathering. Then stay tuned for The Mountain Life. Today's guests include National Geographic Adventurer of the Year, Mike Lebecki. He'll be presenting at the Eccles Center this Friday night, March 22nd at 7:30 p.m. Then New York Times bestselling author Eric Blem tells the story of legendary snowboarder Craig Kelly in his new book, The Darkest White, A Mountain Legend and the Avalanche That Took Him. All of that coming up on The Mountain Life, and of course you can hear The Mountain Life every Wednesday morning from 9 to 10. Well, leaders from ski towns across the Mountain West gathered at the Park City Library Santee Auditorium to discuss the slew of challenges facing resort communities. KPCW's Parker Malatesta was there and has this report.
Over 100 people gathered at the Santee Auditorium Monday evening for Leadership Park City's annual forum. The panel included Jonathan Schechter, who sits on the Town Council of Jackson, Wyoming. Schechter told the crowd he believes mountain towns need to start prioritizing quality of life over economic growth.
And what we have is a series of 21st century communities with 20th century operating systems. And so a lot of the struggle that we're facing, in my view, is sort of like generals planning to fight the last war. The ground is shifting underneath our communities so rapidly because there's so much money pouring in so quickly.
Schechter said local governments can only control so much and emphasize the importance of community organizing. Rick Silverman, a longtime resident of Telluride, Colorado, who also spoke on the panel, attributed the problem to affluenza. On the topic of affordable housing, Silverman said cities are often hurting themselves.
Are we fueling need? Sometimes innocently, a luxury hotel is approved, and the higher the cost of the hotel room, the more employees they're going to need. We give approval for expansions of ski areas. So at one end of the continuum, we're beating our breast about how to provide the housing, but not giving the same attention to what are we doing to fuel the demand. And I find that maddening.
To deal with the affordability crisis, author and journalist Paul Anderson of Aspen, Colorado, said they're now regulating the price of food.
The city made a deal with a redeveloped project where the upstairs is a 4,000 square foot penthouse. The street level is a cashmere boutique, and the basement is what they've determined now is going to be the locals' restaurant. They researched the price of hamburgers across the board and decided on the lower third of a cost to assign to the hamburgers to be served at this particular restaurant so that locals can afford to eat there. So we have deed-restricted hamburgers, and I think that's an innovative approach.
The full two-hour panel discussion can be found online at kpcw.org. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
After a several years pause, Who's Art is back. In the studio with details, I have a few of the artists participating, William Cranstover, Kimberly Gray, and Bob Peake. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So I remember my first Who's Art. It was at Pop Jenks back on Main Street, and I'm guessing it was 92, 93. I don't know if, was there something earlier than that?
You mean previous to or earlier than that?
Yeah, earlier than the early 90s.
Oh, in the early 90s. Yeah, I think we started, we were talking the other day, Bob, 88?
I think it was 80.
1988.
I think it was 88, 89, somewhere right in there it started.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you two were a couple of the founders of it?
Yeah, it started, I think we were up in the brew pub, and it was Kurt Damschroeder,
Dave Bean,
Scott Becker. Uh-huh. John Helton.
Michael Begay
was there, yeah. And just kind of started throwing ideas around, and it stuck. And kind of took off from there.
All right, because the question, it was like, who's art? Well, who is art? And I guess, is it what is art or who is art just because of who shows up?
Well, for those people who know Scott Becker, he was in the brew pub very loudly saying, "Who's art? Who's kind of came up with this idea of this thing to call it. Who's art?
Right, exactly. It was one of those things where, who is art? Let's find out, and let's put the people on it, and let's put the artists there together with other artists, so that they can get together and communicate, because that's what it's all about, communication, especially in any art form, you know that.
Yeah, so when we think about it, I mean, we're going on, what, the fifth decade here?
Yeah, exactly.
How long has it been since the last one was held? Because it seems like it's been
about five, six years ago. Randy Barton and I put it together in, I forget where it was, it might have been the Elks Lodge. I think. And, you know, we used to have, when it started out, it was every month, but it was exhausting. I mean, it was like throwing a party for the whole town. So, you know, you had to step back.
Okay.
And then lost a little bit of interest during the way, but just picked up again. And we have some new people, Kimberly Gray, and my daughter, Malia Denali, who's going to kind of take the baton. So it'll keep going.
Okay. So it's happening next Tuesday. Maybe when, where, and how much, Kimberly? You want to?
It starts at 7 p.m. at the cabin, and it's free. It's 21 years and older. And you get to bring one piece of original art, a performance, a song, a writing, a visual,
video,
yeah. any whatever art is, and bring it, and we're really excited to see who's going to show up and what the variety might be.
Okay, so do people need to pre-register, or they just show up?
They just show up,
yeah.
And you know, the more, you know, we love the performing arts as well, and we had a lot of that stuff going on. We have the visual, but the performing arts always has that extra little bit of extreme flavor. Like we were talking about Roger Fuller and Zay Fahd and a number of things that they did, which really added a lot of flavor to it.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can talk about it on the air. But.
Not with Roger.
Not with Roger. God bless his soul.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and I remember first one, it was Mary Beth Maziarz. I mean, she was just known as Mary Beth at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And played a piano. I mean, she just had moved to town, I think, just a sweet young thing. So
yeah.
Will you have instruments, or people need to bring their own portable keyboards?
They'll bring their own instruments, but we'll have the microphones and stage and everything set up. And, you know, that, and Randy will take care of that end of it.
Okay. And so it's, you know, people are going to be, there's no food, but drinking and gathering. So then you're just like, okay, someone's going to be performing.
Yep.
There. Are you perform your poem, you know,
right.
With people talking?
Yeah, people talking, performing, people showing their artwork, no commercial sales. You know, we got to get away from the commercial. Nobody sells inside the cabin, but, you know, if you want to step outside in the alley and cut a deal, you're well, you know, more than welcome to, but you can't do that inside the cabin, not for this event anyway.
All right. So both Bob and Cranny, you paint.
Mm-hmm.
What other kind of artists are you looking for then?
Bob Peake, may I just interject, you know, paints houses, buildings, but he's a wonderful fine art painter.
Free paint I get out of leftovers.
Yeah, free paint, lots of discounts on the paint, but he uses it well.
Yeah.
Thank you. We're looking for, sculptors, painters, performance artists, videographers, anything. It's more things that people are working on, not specifically some piece you've had around that you're very proud of from 15 years ago. It's more kind of what you're working on now and you know, with some open ears, maybe some critique, and you can ask what people are thinking and get some feedback.
Right. Some things you've had in the closet for years and you don't think it's any good and, you know, want some feedback. Yeah, all of that stuff. New work, people who think their work is great. You know, the artist is always, there's a twofold thing with the artist. They need that feedback from the for the people coming and taking a look at it, because that brings it to the external world, really. And so you get to communicate. Communication is what it's all about.
All right. Now, Kimberly, are you helping to organize, or are you going to bring some art as well?
Both. I'm helping to organize, and I'm a painter photographer also. But I think that for me, this is my first Who's Art, so it's really exciting to bring all these different artists, whatever you think art is. You know, that's the beauty about art, is it's sort of in the eye of the beholder, and just to bring all those people together. So,
okay, it's always a good time.
Oh yeah. No, it's always a good time, no matter what. And I hope you come, Leslie, because I've heard you sing.
It's on my calendar. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll have to be there early.
Yeah.
You know, I'd like to say that, you know, like Kimberly sitting next to her here, I've seen you, but I didn't. You know, didn't know you and didn't know you were an artist. And that's one of the greatest things that's for me that's come out of Who's Art, is meeting people, that you had no idea were performance artists or fine artists, whatever, doing what they do. And it's just a great way to get together and see other people in town that kind of give you a common bond.
Yeah, it's community. It's all about community. And we want to bring this back into the community, too, because Park City is an arts town. Yeah. Everybody loves the ski, but we're an arts town.
Okay. Anything else you guys want to mention?
No.
Okay.
No. Thank you.
Again, Who's Art next week, Tuesday, from 7 to 10 p.m. at the Cabin on Main Street. Again, everyone's invited. You just have to be 21 and older. And if you do have some art, my understanding is that you do need to bring your own easel or a small table in which to display the...
Yeah, we'll have some things there. And the artist should get there a little earlier, around 6:30. We'll help them set up and bring whatever they can.
Okay. Festive celebration of art.
Thanks, Les. Look forward to it, guys.
Thank you, Leslie. Thank you so much.
Thanks
to a snowy February, Park City Mountain has extended its winter season. The resort added 8 extra days to spin lifts through April 22nd. That's a Monday, with a slew of spring festivities happening between now and then. The free spring concert series at Canyons Village is happening every Saturday through April 13th, and the annual pond skimming competition returns to the Eagle Super Pond at the base of the Eagle Chairlift April 6th. Skiers and riders 18 and older can try their luck. Registration is required. Spots are limited. More information can be found on the Park City Mountain events calendar. Snow Basin Resort has also announced that it will extend its season. Previously scheduled to close April 14th, Snow Basin near Ogden now open through April 28th. Additional resort closing dates can be found online at kpcw.org. Dates are subject to change depending on weather and snow conditions. And Sundance has announced the dates of the 2025 Film Festival for Park City. KPCW's Christine Weller reports that another deadline looms for the festival's future.
The 2025 Sundance Film Festival will run from January 23rd to February 2nd in Park City and Salt Lake City. While the festival is still 10 months away, director Eugene Hernandez says work has already started for the 2025 edition. More details about the festival will be released in the coming months. That includes the festival's future in Park City. Sundance made Park City its home in 1985, and since then has brought tens of thousands of visitors each year. But Sundance's contract with Park City expires in 2026, and the organization is working on a new strategic plan. Sundance CEO Joanna Vicent previously told the Park City Council film festivals worldwide have struggled to financially recover from the COVID-19 pandemic, and Sundance is no different. That means Sundance has to look at all options and revenue streams.
We've grown up with Park City, and we continue to think that nothing, absolutely nothing, replaces the incredible in-person experience. But we're also understanding, you know, digital, how do we engage with audiences that are younger and maybe can't come to Park City.
Sundance has until October 1st, 2024, to determine if it will continue to call Park City home or find a new base location. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, this Thursday, the Park City Board of Realtors presents the first in a 3-part speaker series titled Peace, Love, and Rock and Roll. In the studio with a preview, I have the CEO of the Board of Realtors, Jamie Johnson, on the phone. The first guest who will be presenting on Thursday, Tim Weishire. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Jamie,
good morning, Leslie.
Yeah, Jamie, maybe just first tell us when, where, and how much?
Absolutely. So this is a free speaker series for the entire community. We have plenty of seats available at the Eccles Center here in Park City, and it starts at 5:30 this Thursday, March 21st. And as Leslie mentioned, the first topic for peace is dealing with difficult people, the art of communicating with tact and professionalism. And we are so excited to have Tim Weishire from Orlando, Florida, joining us for that. And then we obviously have two more coming up that I'll tell you about in a bit.
Okay, so who's invited?
The entire community. So we obviously, as the Board of Realtors, promote it to our membership, which, you know, everybody in town is a real estate agent, so we have lots of those. But we are also opening it up to communities, to the resorts, to Park City Municipal, anyone that has a business or deals with difficult people. So I think we all can attest to that.
All right. So why is the board putting together a speaker series?
Yeah, You know, every time I come in and I talk, we want to encourage community involvement. We want to make our community a better place to live. And so we are just doing this as a free service to the community, as something that the Board of Realtors is sponsoring and working with other organizations in town to promote.
All right, Tim, tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Sure. Well, so I'm based in Orlando, Florida. I've had the honor of serving in a few different roles throughout my profession and career. I'm a former elected official in the state, which I used to oversee one of the larger school districts in the state of Florida, in fact, one of the largest school districts in America. And then beyond that, I had the honor of being appointed to oversee the Greater Orlando Aviation Authority. Might seem like an interesting transition from education to planes. But really what it comes down to is that I'm known for understanding how to effectively lead organizations and create cultural change. And so between my time in service and education and leading that and ultimately becoming a voice for national education in America, to now being appointed to oversee one of the busiest airports on earth with 75 million people anticipated coming through our airport all the time, I've been honored to be able to spend my adult life giving back to the communities that I love and invested so much in me.
Yeah, well, so then how do you become an expert dealing with difficult people?
Yeah, I don't know if you're ever really an expert, right? But you grow and you learn every single day. I think one of the first things we want to really think about is we all deal with difficult people. And when we think about difficult people, it's always to create a caricature in our mind. But the truth of it is, let's be honest, at some point or another, we may even be that difficult person. And so the question becomes, how do you view people? How do you view relationships? How do you view communication? And how do you build a process that when things get tough and you're dealing with people that are maybe coming at you in a hard way or going about a circumstance in a very different way that we know is not going to get us to where we want, how do you first relate and respond as opposed to react and try to approach humanity, people, commonality with humanity, and this idea of saying, like, look, we're all the same. We're all trying to figure out how to, you know, live and love and serve and create and do and achieve. And if we can just sometimes take a step back and just realize that we're all people trying to figure out how to get better every single day, it gives us an opportunity to maybe have a different lens that sometimes we're more inclined to have just out of the gate.
Yeah. Well, maybe define a difficult person. And I guess it's probably like pornography. I guess you know it when you see it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. When I'm with you guys, I'll be happy to tell some stories as well as some very unique circumstances that I've dealt with. But, you know, difficult person really is just, you think about any communication you have. I would tell you that the way you want to think about who am I calling difficult, it's maybe the person who's approaching something from an emotional standpoint or maybe just a lack of understanding standpoint as opposed to trying to figure out how to come to get to the best end result. And by the way, best end result, that can mean many things. In education, sometimes it was me dealing with parents. Sometimes it was dealing with teachers or students. Sometimes it was dealing with community leaders or other elected officials. In the airport world, it could be dealing with passengers. It could be dealing with the 24,000 employees that work on our airport every single day. And so a difficult person sometimes is the one that we're looking at in the mirror. And so first I want people to know is that by attending and spending some time together, we'll first realize how do we make sure we don't become that difficult person, because we all have those temptations at times. But then number two, how do we identify maybe when we're not dealing so much with a difficult person, but a difficult situation? And how do we maybe decouple that so that we can still relate and connect and communicate in a way that builds unity and connection and growth and purpose, as opposed to division and dissension and a breakdown of society or whatever circumstance we may be dealing with?
Yeah. But when you look at it, I mean, why are people difficult? I mean, I know I can be difficult when I'm not heard.
Yeah. Well, and that's it, right? So everyone first and foremost wants to feel valued, heard, and understand. So I love that you mentioned that. I think, look, in truth, people, we all come from different backgrounds, and that's a beautiful thing. But in those backgrounds, some of us have been given skills or training or had experiences that have enabled us to know how to deal with people or circumstances differently. And so when you start thinking about, okay, well, why am I not feeling heard, or what is this, or do I have the tools to effectively communicate what it is that I'm wanting so that I can feel heard and valued? You know, it's an interesting story. You know, I mentioned that I was leading education. I had the honor, but also it was a difficult circumstance, of leading the entire education organization in the state of Florida in the middle of COVID-19. So I had 3 million students in the state. I had to figure out what policies we're going to make and what was going to happen, and working with the Department of Health and the governor's office and chancellor and all these people to figure things out. And, you know, people that were good, loving, committed, kind, caring citizens and residents and parents and constituents within our community became difficult only because they were scared, or they were operating from a mindset that they were seeking information and they didn't realize that maybe they were coming across as difficult. But I really do think it goes to your point, is they wanted to be heard, they wanted to be understood, and they wanted to know that the decisions that were being made were mindful of what was in their best interest, whether it be as a taxpayer or as a parent or as a teacher or even as a student or otherwise.
So will the presentation be specifically focused on difficult people in a real estate setting, or is this wide open?
Yeah, it's wide open. So, yeah, real estate is one part, and I'm certainly going to be, you know, glad to be with some realtors and get to network with everyone from Park City. But the truth is, I love the way Jamie opened this up. It really doesn't matter what cross-section of the community you come from. We all are working every single day to try to figure out how do we get a little bit better, be a little bit more successful, a little bit more productive. And so, no, it will not focus on real estate. It'll focus on us as people, as leaders, or as contributors to what's happening within our community. So I'm looking forward to being with everyone.
All right. And I know we want to get people there to hear for themselves, but maybe what are some of the tips and tricks that people can incorporate to effectively deal with difficult people without becoming a difficult person themselves?
Yeah, so one of the things that I talk about a lot, I have a phrase that it came up one time. I was traveling internationally with a group of local leaders, and things were not going well with the trip. This was during COVID and lockdowns and all these type of things and a lot of logistics. And I turned to the person to my right and said, you know, you're about to experience my patience. And they kind of responded, and they're like, hey, you are so patient. And so I say that to say, when we find ourselves dealing with things, one of the things I like to tell people is realize that if we could just slow everything down, I like to think of The Matrix, the movie The Matrix, with Keanu Reeves in this, when he had the ability to just kind of slow things down and begin to see what was really happening. So often we find ourselves dealing with difficult people or difficult circumstances because we allow our emotions to get up too high and too fast. And if we can just learn the skills to slow that down and begin to be a little bit more introspective and to be less responsive and reactive in this emotional way, it empowers us ultimately to get to the best end result. And so we're going to talk through some of that. We're going to talk about, you know, the impacts of not doing that and the choices that we make. And if we slow down, here are the outcomes. If we don't and we lean in and we drive even harder, what then becomes the net result of that? And oftentimes what happens is we start to see these divides that exist, and that could be within our families, within our community, within our businesses for sure. And we certainly see it, let's be honest, in our society right now. When you think about the divisions that exist, I think what we need is a little bit more conversation about how do we empathize and connect with one another and just slow down enough to hear and understand where somebody may be coming from instead of trying to think about what it is we're going to say next.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to add, Tim, about the presentation you'll be making Thursday?
No, I'm grateful for the opportunity to come out. Obviously, you guys are in one of the most beautiful parts of America, and so it's going to be an honor to be with everyone. I know that I'm honored, Jamie. Thank you for the invitation to join you guys. And I know it'll be a good time together. It'll be a time of coming together, really leaning in and understanding that we all want to grow. And I would just, again, say that it doesn't matter which cross-section of the community you come from, we're all going to leave feeling benefited from it.
Okay, well, look forward to it, Tim. Thank you for your time this morning. Jamie, I was just going to ask you, how did you come across Tim?
Yeah, so with my work on the national level with the National Association of Realtors, I actually served on a national committee for strategic planning with Tim. And so when I was looking at this topic and knowing his work with many organizations across the country when it comes to strategic initiatives and working with organizations, I reached out and said, I think you'd be a great fit for this talk that we're doing. And again, as you just heard, I think he's going to be an amazing addition to this series. So again, we'd love for the community to come out. Plenty of spots. You can find the information at eventbrite.com or on our website at parkcityrealtors.com. You can register or just show up and bring your community members with you, employees, friends, spouses, whoever it is that you feel like might benefit from this talk. We'd love to have them.
Okay. So again, Tim's going to kind of represent the peace part of the Peace, Love, and Rock and Roll series. Who do you got on deck for the love and rock and roll speakers?
Absolutely. So June 27th is the next one, again at 5:30 at Eccles, and that will be Rochelle Raven, who is actually somewhat of a local. She was on Leadership 28 with Leslie and I here in town, and she will be speaking on the topic of love, self-love, and care techniques, and she does this as her profession, and we're excited to have a local participate there. And then we have September 26th is the rock and roll piece, and that is still going to be a surprise as to who that's going to be, but that is showing up with a rock star mentality, having confidence and humility in everything that you do. So again, I think it's an amazing speaker series, such a topic that we, or topics that we can all learn from, and hope that the community will join in.
Okay, Jamie Johnson, Tim Weishire, thanks so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
My pleasure.
10 Park City residents are looking to reverse the approval of tech billionaire Matthew Prince's home plans for Treasure Hill. KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports.
The Park City Planning Commission approved Prince's home plans in a split vote in February. While the project received the go-ahead, two commissioners objected to the approval, citing conflicting statements and confusing footprint calculations. An appeal was filed March 1st by Prince's direct neighbors, Eric and Susan Herman, and co-signed by 8 other Old Town and Rossi Hill residents. They argue the Planning Commission failed to provide due consideration for the impacts the home will have by not properly enforcing the city's development code. Attorney Bruce Baird, who is representing the Princes, said he expects them to prevail.
We believe that the Planning Commission made the right decision with careful and detailed explanations.
Park City's newly formed 3-member appeal panel will hear the neighbors' arguments April 30th and decide whether the Planning Commission acted appropriately. That decision could ultimately be appealed to 3rd District Court. Matthew Prince is the founder and CEO of cybersecurity company Cloudflare and owner of the Park Record. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
And the People's Health Clinic has received $1 million from the Yield Giving Fund, one of 360 nonprofits that responded to an open call for applications. Billionaire philanthropist Mackenzie Scott announced Tuesday she's handing out $640 million. That's more than twice the amount that she had initially pledged to give away this year. According to her Yield Giving website, the open call asks for applications from nonprofits that are community-led with missions to advance the voices and opportunities of individuals and families of meager or modest means. Only nonprofits with annual budgets between $1 and $5 million were eligible to apply. The People's Health Clinic was one of 82 organizations that received $1 million. 279 others were awarded $2 million. CEO Mari Lining is grateful for the funding that'll be used to extend the clinic's evening hours starting this summer.
Our patient population has just extremely demanding jobs with restrictive work hours. And based on a patient survey we conducted last summer, what they really want to be able to do is come in and see us after work in the evening.
So why People's Health Clinic? Lining says the staff from Yield Giving were very complimentary with their feedback.
They liked our innovative programming, including how we've approached the care of patients with diabetes, how we've addressed latent tuberculosis in town, something that the health department hasn't had funding for. The fact that we've started a food pharmacy in collaboration with other nonprofit partners in town. And they also commented on how well we take care of our staff.
The clinic is open Tuesdays from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Lining would like to add the extended hours on Wednesday and Thursday evenings as well. She's often surprised by the number of people who don't know Park City has a free health clinic, which she believes is part of the critical infrastructure that makes Park City run.
I want to make sure that our community understands we take care of people who support the tourism industry. Park City is famous for tourism, and we talk about sustainability and tourism, but for tourism to be sustainable, we have to have the staff to support this industry. And the staff are largely in employment situations where they're not receiving benefits, and without us, they would not have health care.
While the gift is a significant step forward, Lining knows there is still much work to be done. The uninsured population in the Park City area, she says, continues to grow and underscores the ongoing need for sustainable funding to expand the clinic services. The Associated Press reports Mackenzie Scott has given away $16.5 billion from the fortune she came into after divorcing Amazon founder Jeff Bezos. Well, the Park City Artists Association inviting the public to its annual Into Art, a local artist showcase this weekend. In the studio with details, a couple of the artists who will be exhibiting this work, Karen Kendall and Kelly Gallagher. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, Karen, do you want to start? Just tell us when and where.
Yeah, sure. So it's the Spring Into Art, a local artist showcase, which will be held at the DoubleTree by Hilton, the Yarrow Hotel. And it will be Friday, March 22nd, this Friday, 3 to 8 o'clock, and Saturday, March 23rd, 10 to 6.
Okay, so 2 days.
2 days.
All right. Free for anybody that wants to come in?
Yeah, free for anybody that wants to come in. So we hope y'all come down.
Okay. So how many artists are you going to have, Kelly?
So we have 30 artists who are going to participate, and it's really exciting. We have painters, photographers, ceramics artists, fiber arts, jewelry, and then sculptures. We have both steel and glass sculptors.
All right.
Participating.
So how were these artists selected? Was it just kind of first come, first serve, or...?
Yeah, it was actually first come, first serve. We did have a wait list as well. We have... two people that will be taking the place, so we filled our wait list as well. And yeah, we just had a really great response. We were fortunate enough that the Yarrow Hotel donated extra space and extra ballroom for us as a great partner and sponsor so that we could expand to 30. We had originally planned on only 25 artists, and we were able to add some additional artists to make it an even more vibrant and exciting show.
Okay, I was gonna ask, does the DoubleTree then give you kind of a break on their conference space, given that you're kind of working for yourselves?
Yeah, they really did. They worked with us so very well. It was great. You know, we're just very excited to be able to get all 30 artists in there.
Yeah.
You know, when we went out and did the call for artists, it wasn't just for PCAA members. So we went out for people in the Wasatch back, and we actually have a couple artists who are coming up from the Valley as well. So we were really pleased that we got a great response.
Okay, that's what I was going to ask. Was it only members of the Artists Association? How many members do you have in the association? Any idea?
I think we're pushing 60 in the Artists Association. Yeah. Yeah, we've been around for a very long time, and we're sort of a grassroots organization, a social organization for artists, as well as an arts advocacy group. And so we've been trying to find various ways for local artists to be able to show and exhibit and sell their art, you know, from a grassroots basis, you know, trying to get us out there. So this was a big deal for us. It's the first show we've ever done. And we're really pleased with the way that it's coming around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So you haven't done this before. I was thinking you had. All
no,
right. Well, so how is it that, you know, artists get your work sold? I mean, you can, if you're lucky to get into the arts festival, or if you're lucky to have a gallery do your exhibit, but really those are the only couple
yeah.
of opportunities,
right?
Yeah, you know, it's been really exciting that the Park City Summit County Arts Council has been able to open the new Create PC galleries and studios, which is awesome, down on Kearns. So that's one venue that we've got. We can participate in the Silly Market, both the summer market and the holiday markets, if you can get in. I know Michelle said that there are over 600 vendors who applied this year, so for the Silly Market, which is amazing. So we have those kind of venues. The Arts Council also puts on, they'll put a show on later this summer, but there aren't a ton of offerings. And so we were so excited when we got the opportunity to put this show on. Absolutely amazing. And we're just, we've been really pleased that we've been able to actually pull it off.
Yeah, there's actually very little local artist representation in town. You sort of have Main Street, and then you have the Arts Festival, which are both very difficult to get into, you know. And so these kind of opportunities like the Create PC, which is dependent on, you know, where we can find real estate for free or cheap, that Arts Council can find real estate free or cheap, which is also hard in Park City, as you probably realize. So we're trying to just find space, and that's kind of where we're at right now, because there is not a lot of opportunities. So the show is a great thing. We're really excited to be able to do this for some local artists. Yeah,
I bet. I mean, and when you hear 600 vendors, it sounds to me like somebody's got some space that they'd want to offer, right? I mean, that it could be constantly filled and rotated.
Oh, it'd be nice. Yeah.
So everything Friday and Saturday for sale.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And then people should know that, you know, at the Yarrow, people have come to be able to expect to go to a show there. Right, there have been other art shows there. So the hotel, their restaurant, and other facilities are open. You know, the parking is free to people that are coming to participate in the show and to come see the art. So I think it could be a good draw for families as well as other people that are interested in purchasing the art.
Okay, well, tell us what each of you will be bringing.
Oh, okay. So I'm a steel artist, and so I'll have steel sculptures and wall hangings. And I actually started getting interested in art by taking a class at the Kimball Art Center in 2015, back when they were still on Main Street. It was welding class, and I loved it so much that I went and learned the art and learned more about welding and kind of turned that into a business selling the pieces that I like to make.
Good job. Yeah. I took that class, too. It was fabulous.
It's fabulous.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and it's been kind of full circle because I now teach that class at the Kimball, which is really fun. It's really fun. I love to see people come in and then take home something that they made themselves.
Yeah. Mine's still in the garden.
Yeah.
Yeah. And nice. What about you, Karen?
I do representational abstract landscape painting, fairly large pieces in acrylics.
Okay. And then how many pieces are you going to have with you?
I think I'll have probably about 15, and then I'll have some smaller tabletop pieces as well. To try and get different price points and some matted things and stuff like that.
Okay. And I was going to, that was one of my questions. You know, you do have that new Create Space at 1500 Kearns Boulevard, but just not enough space there for everyone? Is that why you felt like you needed to do something else?
Well, we want to make sure that any artists that can, that are interested, have the opportunity to get as much exposure as possible, right? And so having this show is just giving people one more forum to be able to sell their art. And I should mention, it's kind of similar to what Peg Bodell's doing with Miners 9. Right? She also is having small shows. And so we just want to make sure that the local public here knows that there are a lot of artists, and we're creating venues anywhere we can to be able to share the type of art that we make.
And another nice thing about the showcase is that with CREPC, you're very limited in the number of pieces that you can show. And so the art showcase gives artists an opportunity to show a body of work, which is really nice to have that.
Okay. Again, this Friday, 3 to 8 p.m., Saturday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. there at the Doubletree Yarrow. Free. People just need to show up and enjoy.
Yeah, please do.
Absolutely.
Okay. They'll have food and beverages within the Yarrow. Other than that, people just, show up. Okay. Thanks, lady.
Okay. Thank you so much.
That's Karen Kendall and Kelly Gallagher with the Park City Artists Association. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. Taking a look at some local news, the Althing and Ski Museum has named its new executive director. KPCW's Christine Weller reports that Annie Balmer will take the lead next month.
The Althing and Ski Museum Foundation aims to preserve the history of skiing in the Intermountain region. It oversees the Althing and Ski Museum and the George S. and Dolores Dore Eccles 2002 Olympic and Paralympic Winter Games Museum. Both are in the S.J. Quinney Winter Sports Center at the Utah Olympic Park. The foundation, established in 1989, was intended to be a modest ski museum honoring ski legend Althing. After Salt Lake City was selected to host the 2002 Winter Olympics, plans for the museum were expanded to include a 2002 Olympic gallery, transforming it into a winter sports cultural center. Connie Nelson, who led the foundation for 20 years, announced her retirement in February. She said her replacement should enjoy the outdoors, be involved in a community, and have experience with nonprofit fundraising, as museum admission is free. New executive director Annie Baumer meets those qualifications. Baumer lives in Draper, Utah, is an avid skier, and has experience in museum management. From 2020 to 2022, Baumer directed the Heritage Museum of Layton, curated the Syracuse City Museum, and was the gallery coordinator for the Davis County Arts Council. Baumer is also a board member of the Draper City Historic Preservation Commission. President of the Foundation Board of Trustees, Ron Steele, said Baumer's museum operations knowledge and experience with fundraising, youth programs, and museum visitor engagement will support the foundation's future goals. Baumer will take the lead at the foundation April 1st. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
Well, Park City may not lose its theaters after all, that despite the parent company filing for bankruptcy last month, KPCW's Connor Thomas reports.
The company that operates Redstone 8 Cinemas and Holiday Village 4 Cinemas didn't file for bankruptcy. That company's parent company did.
So it's like the grandfather, not the parent, of these theaters has filed bankruptcy?
That's bankruptcy lawyer Tom Beckett on KPCW's Mountain Money. The upshot of what Beckett's saying is there's no immediate threat that Redstone or Holiday Village's leases will be terminated. He said one of two things will happen now that Metropolitan Theaters Corporation, the grandfather company, has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Its creditors will either renegotiate and accept lower debt payments, or the creditors will dissolve Metropolitan Theaters by selling it or acquiring its property. That would mean acquiring Metropolitan Rocky Mountain Cinemas, LLC, the subsidiary that owns Redstone and Holiday Village. The Chapter 11 bankruptcy proceedings will temporarily suspend Metropolitan Theaters' debts to allow for those negotiations. So Metropolitan Theaters can attempt to convince creditors they can get better returns without taking over the company.
So it's got to persuade them that reorganization is better than liquidation. Otherwise, the creditors say, you know, let's get this over with. Let's pull off the Band-Aid. Let's just liquidate it. And that happens quite a lot.
Metropolitan Theaters Corporation has not indicated it wants to end any leases held by its subsidiary, Rocky Mountain Cinemas, yet. But if the creditors liquidate Metropolitan, Rocky Mountain's new owner could decide to end those leases, which include Redstone and Holiday Village. But the theaters aren't facing that possibility yet. For Mountain Money's full interview with Tom Beckett about the bankruptcy proceedings, visit kpcw.org. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
And North Summit firefighters contained two fires after at least one controlled burn on Monday. A train sparked the first brush fire along the tracks in Hennifer around 2:30 Monday afternoon. It was just off East Hennifer Road near Owens Creek. Fire crews contained it to just a tenth of an acre. Hours later, just after 4 o'clock, the North Summit Fire District was called to another brush fire in Wanship in a field northwest of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints Ward House off of Old Lincoln Highway. Firefighters say it was an agricultural burn that winds blew out of control. The fire district reminds residents keep water close by during any permitted burn. Well, another hotel and luxury lodge are now approved to be built near Deer Valley's Jordanhill Gondola. KPCW's Grace Dorfler has more on the Wasatch County MIDA update.
The Military Installation Development Authority, known as MIDA, has approved more development around the base of Deer Valley Resort's East Village expansion in Wasatch County. During MIDA's Development Review Committee meeting Tuesday, members voted yes to site plans for the Pioche Hotel and the Marsala Lodge. The 180-room Pioche Hotel is planned along Deer Hollow Road, just above the Jordanhill Gondola, offering access to the slopes. Extel's Andrew Selnow said a nationally recognized company will run the hotel.
We have a brand in the wings that we hope to get signed up over the next couple months and then do a proper public announcement.
Construction on the hotel is expected to begin later this year. It will take 2 to 3 years to complete. Plans for the Marsala Lodge were also approved Tuesday. It will sit just west of the Grand Hyatt currently under construction. It will be built to serve 138 estate lots in the adjacent gated community, Marsala Mountain. Here's committee member Rob Donegan.
The lodge will provide year-round amenities, including ski and ski-out access, a swimming pool, lounges, a game room, fitness, pickleball courts, hot tubs, and fire pits.
Both sites are part of MIDA's Military Recreation Facility Project area, originally designated to provide members of the military with recreation and wellness opportunities. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Summit County has received two awards for its work to conserve the Weber River and East Canyon Creek watersheds. Utah's chapter of Trout Unlimited, a national nonprofit dedicated to protecting fisheries and watersheds, presented Lands and Natural Resources Manager Jess Kirby with the awards March 14th. Kirby is the first ever recipient of the Community Conservation Partner Award. Summit County as a whole received the second ever Community Action Towards Conservation Habitat, or CATCH, Award. The honors recognize Kirby and the county's efforts to conserve the Weber River watershed, which includes the Camas Valley and northern Summit County. Trout Unlimited also highlighted the county's acquisition of the 8,600-acre 910 cattle ranch home to East Canyon Creek. According to Summit County, Kirby and Trout Unlimited have collaborated to fund improved fish passages and installing man-made beaver dams to improve water quality. Helper City won the first CATCH Award back in 2023 for collaborating with Trout Unlimited on the Price River watershed.